The Mortals in the House by Charles Dickens. Under none of the accredited ghostly circumstances, and environed by none of the conventional ghostly surroundings, did I first make acquaintance with the house which is the subject of this Christmas piece. I saw it in the daylight, with the sun upon it. There was no wind, no rain, no lightning, no thunder, no awful or unwonted circumstance of any kind to heighten its effect. More than that, I had come to it direct from a railway station. It was no more than a mile distant from the railway station, and as I stood outside the house, looking back upon the way I had come, I could see the goods train running smoothly along the embankment in the valley. I will not say that everything was utterly commonplace, because I doubt if anything can be that except to utterly commonplace people, and there my vanity steps in. But I will take it on myself to say that anybody might see the house as I saw it any fine autumn morning. The manner of my lighting on it was this. I was travelling towards London out of the north, intending to stop by the way to look at the house. My health required a temporary residence in the country, and a friend of mine who knew that, and who had happened to drive past the house, had written to me to suggest it as a likely place. I had got into the train at midnight and had fallen asleep, and had woke up and had sat looking out of the window at the brilliant northern lights in the sky, and had fallen asleep again, and had woke up again to find the night gone, with the usual discontented conviction on me that I hadn't been to sleep at all. Upon which question, in the first imbecility of that condition, I am ashamed to believe that I would have done wager by battle with the man who sat opposite me. That opposite man had had, through the night, as that opposite man always has, several legs too many, and all of them too long. In addition to this unreasonable conduct, which was only to be expected of him, he had had a pencil and a pocket-book, and had been perpetually listening and taking notes. It had appeared to me that these aggravating notes related to the jolts and bumps of the carriage, and I should have resigned myself to his taking them under a general supposition that he was in the civil engineering way of life, if he had not sat staring straight over my head whenever he listened. He was a goggle-eyed gentleman of a perplexed aspect, and his demeanour became unbearable. It was a cold, dead morning, the sun not being up yet, and when I had outwatched the paling light of the fires of the iron country, and the curtain of heavy smoke that hung at once between me and the stars, and between me and the day, I turned to my fellow traveller and said, "I beg your pardon, sir, but do you observe anything particular in me?" For really he appeared to be taking down either my travelling cap or my hair with a minuteness that was a liberty. The goggle-eyed gentleman withdrew his eyes from behind me, as if the back of the carriage were 100 miles off, and said, with a lofty look of compassion for my insignificance, "In you, sir, B." "B, sir?" said I, growing warm. "I have nothing to do with you, sir," returned the gentleman. "Pray let me listen." "Oh." He enunciated this vowel after a pause and noted it down. At first I was alarmed. For an express lunatic and no communication with the guard is a serious position. The thought came to my relief that the gentleman might be what is popularly called a rapper. One of a sect for some of whom I have the highest respect, but whom I don't believe in. I was going to ask him the question when he took the bread out of my mouth. "You will excuse me," said the gentleman contemptuously, "if I am too much in advance of common humanity to trouble myself at all about it. I have passed the night, as indeed I pass the whole of my time now, in spiritual intercourse." "Oh," said I, somewhat snappishly. "The conferences of the night began," continued the gentleman, turning several leaves of his notebook, "with this message: evil communications corrupt good manners." "Sound," said I, "but absolutely new?" "New from spirits," returned the gentleman. I could only repeat my rather snappish "oh," and ask if I might be favoured with the last communication. "A bird in the hand," said the gentleman, reading his last entry with great solemnity, "is worth two in the bosh." "Truly, I am of the same opinion," said I, "but shouldn't it be bush?" "It came to me bosh," returned the gentleman.